Speaking today with Linda Chavez-Thompson, who is the Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor in Texas. Linda, the first question I'd like to ask is why are you running for this office?
I like to ask myself that question. It was asked that I run, and despite the fact that I got lots of phone calls from people convincing me or trying to convince me to run, it was almost a situation where when I came back after retirement, I'd been gone for 12 years, got back to Texas, and things weren't right in Texas. I didn't feel things were right in Texas. My granddaughter's education was tanking. I mean, the way the system works, or I think it doesn't work. She was stressing out over learning to test. Teachers were stressing out over teaching to test. And I guess one of those situations where you're always saying, well, somebody should do something about this, and you're always looking for somebody else to do something about this. So I was given the opportunity. Somebody came knocking on the door and said, you're it. We want you to do it. And I said, well, please tell me the reasons why I should give up my fun retirement life. But it's about why we need to make changes in Texas, and the challenge is there. It's not easy running against a multimillionaire who's got all the money to spend in this election. I have the people, he has the money. But the question here is, why am I running is very simple. We have become the laughingstock of the country with our State Board of Education and them wanting to wipe history off our Texas history books and American history books. They took out a controversial picture, a woman in a suit with a briefcase in her hand, because that was not the right image for kids up to the age of, or rather the fifth grade, my understanding. And so many other great people like Cesar Chavez and others that were wiped out. I saw an educational system, I saw a budget deficit that was growing and growing, and how that hole was plugged up 2 years ago with federal stimulus money. And I kept sitting around waiting for somebody to do something about it. And when I was asked to run, it took me a couple of weeks to think about it, sit down with my family, and decide that I had been tapped to be the one to do something about it, and that's what I've been trying to do for the last 9 months. And the message is getting out there. The people are really responding. And it's not an easy task. Anyone who runs for public office has now my utmost respect, because it's long hours, it's challenging, it's trying to raise money, it's trying to spread the word around. But somebody has to make whatever sacrifice needs to be made to try to change things in Texas, because it can only get worse if we don't try to make those changes.
You mentioned the budget, and of course that's the main concern, I think, on everyone's minds these days. The budget shortfall, which in the neighborhood of $18 billion, how do you want to see the Senate and the legislature deal with this?
That is a very challenging thing. We're looking at maybe $8, maybe $10 billion in the rainy day fund, so we have to take that money out of there. But we're still $8 to $10 billion short.
You would advocate using all of the rainy day fund?
I'm telling you that that's the first thing that would go in there as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
We would then take a look at programs that are not working as well as they should. And many of those are, for instance, like this contract that we have for food stamps. It's taken them 2, maybe 2.5 years to get going and get the backlog caught up. Now, of course, they say it's caught up, but in those 2.5 years, we've lost millions and millions and millions of dollars because we've had such a backlog for people that were qualified for food stamp and weren't getting them. And this is money that could have been spent in the economy here in Texas. We are taking a back seat to other states when we are having people working at such low wages, because low wages beget low taxes, beget low economic drivers in each community because people don't have the money to spend. We're encouraging that with the Texas Enterprise Fund, where we're enticing companies to come to Texas because we have cheap wages. We're the number one state with the most minimum wage jobs. We're also the number one state with executions. Is that anything to be proud of? No. We have an educational system that is faltering, and the Lieutenant Governor and the Governor both are saying we've got to cut education. I don't want to cut education. I think education is such an important piece of where we need to move the economy, because if we don't get our children to graduate, which they're not, 1 in 3 is dropping out, 1 in 2 Hispanic kids is dropping out. So if we're not encouraging and keeping our kids in school, the economic driver is not going to be there. We're not going to be in place. We're going to be 50th. Right now, thank God for Mississippi, as Rick Perry said, but if we don't do something about this economy, whether it's through our education or whether it's the jobs that come to Texas, whether it's the governor or the lieutenant governor that is telling these companies, yes, we want you in Texas, but how about paying a decent wage and bringing jobs in that have health insurance so that health care costs don't get pushed to counties across the state of Texas in uncompensated health care costs because the state doesn't have the money and hasn't put the money in. We're talking about transportation needs in Texas that will not be funded after 2012 because we haven't looked out for that, other than trying to build a toll road through Texas and have it funded by an out-of-country corporation. So these are things that are happening on our watch, and somebody needs to be looking out for the welfare. We have to look at programs that are not working. One, for instance, it's gone now, but the $4 million electric fence to catch undocumented workers, it caught 11. If you divide 11 into 4 million, that could have been a savings that we could have done. We're looking at fences, and I was in Brownsville and UTB this past week and a half ago. It is the most ridiculous thing that I've ever seen, is this 14-foot fence. Miles inside the border. There's a 10-foot fence on the University of Texas at Brownsville, through the campus. They asked for permission and got permission to build their own fence. It's 10 feet, yet the border is nowhere near it. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. These are things that are being done to keep the people undocumented from coming here. But there's also a problem that they are sometimes some of our generators of money in the state. And we haven't done enough to tap those programs that aren't working, cutting those out versus cutting education or the social network that our families depend on in Texas.
Would you look for places to raise revenue?
I think we have to look at casino gambling. It should be on the table. I want to see what ideas the state senators have as well, because many of them are very experienced people in dealing with budget items. These are people that represent 31 districts in this state that get reelected by those constituencies in those 31 states. They've got a world of experience. I don't sit here and tell you that I know every little bit about being lieutenant governor. I do know one thing. I believe very firmly that David Dewhurst has forgotten where he came from. He was at one time a very raised in a poor environment. He made his money. That's wonderful. But he's forgotten where he came from, and he forgot where he was at one time, and that is exactly where we have people today. So we have to find out where we need to cut. If it's contracts, if it's contractors, especially those that got very good contracts by being donors to either Rick Perry or David Dewhurst re-election campaigns over the years, we have to take a look and cut. But I would look at it cutting education, as far as I'm concerned, as the last place to cut. We cannot afford it. Texas cannot continue to be a low-wage economy with uneducated workforces, a workforce that is uneducated. We are not teaching the skills, and not everybody wants to go to college. I know that. But we need vocational, we need technical schooling in our high schools, in our college, community colleges, and we're just not preparing our citizens and our future workers in Texas, and we're going to suffer economically when it comes down to it.
What would your priorities be for improving education in Texas?
Right now we have 50,000 teachers that are teaching in a subject that they're not certified in. We should move some of those very veteran teachers into low-performing schools. We should look at the salaries across the state of Texas to try to keep our teachers. Many of these are moving out and moving on and not teaching anymore. We're not attracting the kind of teachers that can build our schools back up again. We're not providing for many of the things that we tell the districts that they have to do, because we pass a lot of unfunded mandates at the state level. And so then we pass it on to the counties and let them pay for it. The cell phone restrictions for school zones. Some counties have the money to put up signs, some don't. My own, Bexar County, some have it in some of the schools. Now, it's a law that's gone into effect for all school districts, but some have the signs, some don't have the signs because they can't afford it. So these are mandates that are sent down to the school districts. We have school districts that are totally maxed out on their property taxes and still struggling to make ends meet. We currently have $830 million that's up for grabs, and the governor won't take it because he wants his own brand on it and be able to spend it wherever he wants to spend it. And the conditions, of course, now are legislated by Congress that he can't. So they've turned us down. I think that was the headline yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know what all of the areas are that we have to strengthen, but I am willing to sit down and talk to Republicans and Democrats. Lieutenant Governor sets the agenda for the Lieutenant Governor sets the agenda for the Senate, sets up the committees, decides where the legislation goes, and if there is, for instance, controversial legislation like immigration reform or another voter ID, it'll have to be dealt with. But as far as I'm concerned, we're going to deal with the budget deficit first. We're going to deal with the things that help working Texans every day first. And then if people want to fight about the voter ID, if they want to fight about immigration reform, or, you know, ultimately do whatever they think they can get the votes for in that area, we'll leave it till the end. We won't leave it until it locks up the Senate, or for that matter, at the House, where it just literally blocked any last-minute legislation passing because they were locked in that wedge issue fight regarding voter ID. So I know that's one of the problems that we're going to have in this legislative session.
Since you brought that up, I mean, in the last Senate, the rules that were adopted at the beginning of the term kind of changed the tradition of the two-thirds rule for bringing legislation to the floor, where they essentially exempted voter ID from that. I mean, do you anticipate something like that happening this time? And, you know, do you think that should be up to the senators, or should the lieutenant
I'm sure that the senators convinced the lieutenant governor that it was the okay thing to do. I know there was a vote of the Senate. I don't know that, in fact, they may be coming back into session with that rule still in place. It's my understanding that it might still be in place.
I believe the old rules are in place until they adopt new rules.
Yes, until they adopt new rules. And it is my hope that they will re-implement the two-thirds rule, because we're talking about 31 senators. 11 of them can be from either party if they want to talk about a piece of legislation instead of just ramming it through. It isn't just about the controversial issues. It's about any and all legislation that is conducted in the Senate, and 11 senators can block, which I think it isn't just about blocking the legislation, but it's about talking it through, discussing it, and not just ramming it through because you have a two-thirds majority vote of Republicans, and if you can get a couple of Democrats to go with you because they either have been cajoled or threatened or whatever the political ramifications could be, and they could ram something through with just a majority vote. I just really feel strongly that the two-thirds vote has worked for years and years in the Senate. They changed it so they could deal with a wedge issue of voter ID fraud. How many documented cases have there been on voter fraud in Texas where somebody has actually been caught with massive voter fraud, if it was somebody voting for somebody else, one or two or three people? You don't have those many voter fraud cases that have come out in the last few elections as they contend. And so I know that that's probably going to be one of the issues, again, that we have to deal with, as well as immigration.
And, you know, you and I had a conversation about immigration a couple of months back after Arizona's law passed. I don't want to rehash all of that because we can refer to that conversation. But since that time, you know, what's your perception of how things have changed? Is the environment better, worse, or about the same for people who, you know, don't want to see an Arizona-like law in Texas?
I'm not hearing the right message from either the lieutenant governor or the governor. They're saying that law would not be good for Texas, but they're also praising Arizona for passing the law. So, you know, it's kind of like a two-sided situation here with both of them. Perry, the Attorney General, is supporting the Jan Brewer appeal all the way up to, I'm sure, the Supreme Court on this issue. But they're not saying we won't pass one here. They're just saying that legislation is not good for Texas. Are they saying something else will be acceptable? Is that what the Lieutenant Governor's message is? Is that what the Governor is saying? They're supportive of Jan Brewer and what she's done, but they say that particular legislation is not what Texas would work in Texas. I know that Debbie Riddle and Leo Berman are both prepared to bring that very same piece of legislation through the House. I haven't heard that anybody in the Senate is doing it. But I will tell you this, that it'll have to get its hearing wherever that piece of legislation lands. But a lot of people have to understand that it can be economically devastating for Texas if that happens. Because we have so much that we deal with Mexico. We have so much. We have to stop the smugglers. We have to stop the guns that go, you know, back into Mexico from here, or money that gets smuggled or drugs that get smuggled, all of those things. We have to have border security. We have to have a law, and we are a nation of laws, and we are a state of laws that says there should not be undocumented immigrants coming into this state of ours. But at the same time, for us to think that we're going to be able to ship 11 to 12 million people back is the most ridiculous thing that I have ever heard. When, in fact, many of these people were brought over. They were literally invited and brought over in buses by employers. So, you know, we brought them here. Now all of a sudden we said, oh, we don't want them, we don't want them. They came over here illegally. Yes, they did. They did come illegally. They did not have the required paperwork to get over here. But they were invited in some cases, and they were provided with abuse of their rights, poor living conditions, time and time again. I was in some of the hog killing plants in North Carolina when they were bused in the night before. All undocumented workers on buses that were paid for by the company to come and bust the union. And they were put to work the next morning. And then they were asked to vote against the union when the union was trying to organize. But they came in buses, air-conditioned buses from Mexico with a company. Even if they were fired, you think they're going back to Mexico? Hell no, they're not going back. They're going to go put someplace else and find a job, or spread themselves out throughout, or they did spread themselves out throughout the country. But they were invited here, many of these people, by the work that was being offered by employers, that no one was fining, no one was looking at their business and what they were doing. So workers were abused. They came here for the American dream, and they, in some cases, got the American nightmare.
What opportunities do you see for reform in criminal justice in Texas?
Well, I'm going to depend on people that have much more experience than I do. The little experience that I've had is representing law enforcement officers. As a union, we represented many of the law enforcement officers. We're talking about better working conditions. We're talking about better wages. We're talking about more protection for the workers that are there. And unfortunately, we don't have that right now. We have a system that is not supporting for instance, the corrections officers that are in our prisons. Many of them are leaving. It's about a 30 to 35% turnover because of the wages, because of the working conditions. The criminal justice system needs to be looked at very carefully, but we need to bring experts in, experts that really know how reform should work within the system, whether it's the Texas Youth
Commission,
the Youth Commission, whether it's our prisons, whatever it is that needs to be fixed, we need to be looking at a more humane method, including more training programs. We've got to train these people so that when they get out, they don't go back to committing crimes, but rather can go and find jobs. We need to find support systems for these people when they come out of prison so that they can be able to find jobs, connect with somebody outside of that. If they go back to their own community and they go back to the same people they used to hang out with, you know, they're going to go back to committing crimes. If we can find a different alternative method for them to become more productive citizens in the state of Texas, I believe that it can be done. We just need to have the kind of commitment from the justice system as well as from the state leadership to get that done.
Talking strategically for a moment here, a lot of people talk about how the Latino vote in Texas is a kind of a sleeping giant, and it needs to be awakened in order for Democrats to perform better in the state. But it's also the case that Latinos vote proportionally less than other demographics, and they tend to wind up on the short end of the stick in terms of receiving apportionments and whatnot as a result of that. You know, where do we stand, and what needs to be done about this?
I'm trying to get them angry. I'm trying to get the Latino voter angry, because everybody keeps talking about this quote unquote sleeping giant. We're trying to tell Latinos that we are trying to give them a new energy to make their voices heard in this election. If there is that sleeping giant, we've got to give them a reason why they should vote. One of the things that I tell the audiences that I speak to in South Texas is, you keep telling me that you're ignored. You keep telling me that people come in here and ask for your vote, and you vote for them, and then they forget about you. But your vote is a very low vote. So your voice is a very low voice. So if you're not heard by voting strongly, whether it's Bill White, me, you give us your votes, you can tell Bill White or you can tell Linda Chavez Thompson, we got you in there because we turned out. It's about motivating them, and you have to pick your subjects. Education is very important for them. Better jobs, a better infrastructure for their communities, you know, a system that actually connects them with a road into the valley, you know, instead of having to take three or four ways to get into and out of McAllen or Brownsville or whatever. Somebody that's paying attention to the fact that the University of Texas at Brownsville doesn't get any UT funding. They have to tax themselves to support the university. The university provides the faculty, and that's it. The community tax themselves to build the campus, and they tax themselves to provide the college education for their children close by to where they can live at home and be able to afford an education. UT has lots of money. Why aren't they supporting this university in South Texas? Because they're Hispanics? Because they can tax themselves when nobody else in Arlington or San Antonio or any place else where they have a branch of the university is paying what the University of Texas at Brownsville is paying for itself? You know, what makes South Texas different? I'm going out there and I'm telling the Hispanic population, if you don't get out to vote, then you're going to get what you're getting every single election cycle, nothing. And you are the one that are responsible for getting nothing. If you want something, then you turn out your vote. You go to your... And one of the biggest problems that we have in South Texas, for the most part, is most of the elections are decided in the primary. It's usually one Democratic faction against another. They run candidates, one wins, one loses. But there's no Republican opposition in November. So they're not getting out to vote because all their races are already decided. Most everybody is in. Right now we have a handful of districts in the state reps, and I think in Cameron County it's a judge's race, and there's a school board election also in some of the counties, some school board races that are up for election on November the 2nd. So some of those counties will come out because there's a special interest there. But a lot of the other races, the state senate seats, most of the state rep seats, they're won because there's nobody running against any of those folks. So they don't have to go out there in November and turn out the vote because they're in. So I'm trying to say, if you are not heard, then what you get is because you didn't turn out and speak loudly.
Okay. You mentioned roads a couple of times, and TxDOT does say they're running out of money. The gas tax hasn't been raised in almost 20 years. The privatized toll roads were proposed and weren't very popular. What do we need to do to ensure that we have the funds we need to pay for our transportation needs?
A couple of things is we need to take a look at the gas tax, of course. That's another one of the things that's going to be very unpopular, but we have to take a look at it. But we also need to look at the legislation that Senator John Corona tried to pass, and which was vetoed, and that is where districts can tax themselves. You know, like in Bexar County, we have, at the Transit Authority, I sit on the Transit Authority Board, we have the ability to say and sell to our district whether they would like to have X amount of money raised by us, by a vote. You know, this is not going to be, we're going to do it without your permission. We're going to ask the citizens to vote it in. Dallas, Fort Worth, anywhere else where there is a transit system in place that could actually call for an election to raise their taxes. It was vetoed. And if it didn't pass, I think it passed, and I think the governor vetoed it, or I think it died in committee. I'm not quite sure what it was. If they let us raise our own monies for our own transportation needs, that's one way. And it was turned down because then it would have taken away from this Trans-Texas corridor and from this company actually building all these toll roads and having us pay for our transportation needs on a toll road. The money certainly wouldn't be staying here. It'd be going to another country. So we need to be taking a look at all of those. And one of the things that I think we need to do, many of the transit companies do not get a tax write-off on the fuel that we use. We still get taxed. And the state of Texas taxes us but doesn't tax some others that use monies. And so we still get that state tax on our fuel in Texas. We're trying to get that off so that we can save that money and reinvest it into the community for transportation and transit needs. But that's not happening until we make the changes that we need to make.
Okay. You talked about engaging the Latino electorate. The kind of overriding national story about this election is how Republicans are more enthusiastic about voting. Are you seeing that when you talk to people? And if so, how do you deal with it?
Well, I'm not talking to their people, okay? So I don't know about their level of enthusiasm. I read it in the paper. I certainly see it in the letters.
How engaged are the voters you're talking to?
The voters that I'm talking to, once we tell them these are the things that the Republicans stand for, get very angry and upset, and they say, you got to be kidding. And we said, go on the website. It's the Republican platform. That's the platform that Rick Perry and David Dewhurst are standing on, and they're not denying it. Eliminating pre-K, privatizing Social Security, eliminating the education and energy departments because they're unconstitutional. They should do away with the hate crimes law. These are in the Republican platform. I'm sure you've seen it. Mm-hmm. And so we're telling people they want to take you back, but they want to take you backwards. They want to take their country back. Who are they? And who are they trying to take it away from? If they're trying to take their country back, I said, number one, it's because we have an African-American president, so they want to take it back so that there will never, ever again be an African-American president. I said, they want to take the country back to where? to where hate crimes are okay? Are the people in Texas ready to give up their Social Security check and hand their accounts over to Wall Street to manage for them so they can pay the fees? And maybe we'll make some money, or maybe we'll have another crash like we did before when they were abusing how they managed our monies. I said, where do they want to take us back to? Is that where you want to be? Is that where you want to go? The answer is always no. So it's a matter about, it's a self-interest. It is a self-interest. What's in it for you? What's in it for your children? What's in it for the future of Texas? And I tell people I speak two languages, and sometimes I speak three. I speak fluent English, I speak fluent Spanish, and don't get me mad or I'll speak another language. And they laugh at that, but it's very upsetting at times, because it's out there. It's out there. People are complacent. People say one politician is the same as the other one. We're trying to show them that there are people who care. I have a passion for the 40-some-odd years I spent in the labor movement. I worked my heart out as a child at 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 30 cents an hour. And so I know what work ethic is. And I know that today, some of those working conditions are still the same as when I was a child. The living conditions of poor people. We have more homeless people on the streets because we're not providing them decent jobs here in Texas. People are working two jobs to make ends meet. Parents are seeing their children dropping out of school and going nowhere, going into nowhere jobs, getting their children nowhere. And what are the answers? The answers are they need to have somebody in Austin that speaks for them. That's what Bill White is trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do.
And why should they vote for you to be Lieutenant Governor on November 2nd?
Because I've been where they are. I know how they feel. I know that I've never forgotten my roots. I believe that the Lieutenant Governor has forgotten his roots. Once he became a multimillionaire, he never looked back. I've got a pension check. Thank God that I've got a pension check. I don't have a boss. I'm retired. Nobody tells me what to do. The people in Texas can't tell me where I need to go for them. I believe I can make a good Lieutenant Governor because I have the passion, I have the fight, I've been there building people's lives up all of my life. There isn't a single thing that I have done as a union leader that I would take back, that I wouldn't do all over again. I'm not ashamed at all of where I've been, what I've done, and certainly not where I'm headed in the direction, and that is of representing every working Texan, whether it be a business person, a corporate leader. But for the most part, Texas is made up of working people who need a really good shot in the arm, and I think I can be that.
All right, Linda Chavez Thompson, thank you very much
Charles,
for speaking to me.
Thank you so much. And again, I apologize for being late.